This is the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Kendall of the notaballerina.com travel blog. Every episode, I'll share travel tales from several fellow travel lovers, and together we hope to entertain and inspire you, remind you of some of your own great travel experiences, and encourage you to hit the road again soon. Hello and welcome to episode 59 of the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. It's all about conversations with locals. When I travel, meeting local people is one of the most fun and rewarding parts for me, and I'm sure for many of you as well. You might remember just in the last episode, in episode 58, we talked about taking photographs of local people when you travel, and Laurie in particular talked about feeling shy to do this, and I think I confess that I feel shy even just speaking to the locals, let alone taking photos of them. But every time that I do it, it turns out to be such a great way to get an insight into how the locals live and how they think, and or even just to get a simply, you know, a great tip for somewhere to go or somewhere to eat. As the more often you can have a conversation with a local when you travel, the more rewarding you will find it. I've been thinking back on the hundreds many hundreds probably of locals I've chatted to on my travels around the world. And just a quick but sweet example is these two elderly men I remember meeting in the port town of Ventspils in Latvia. So it's back in 2003, I think it would have been, on my way from Japan to Slovakia. It's a long way around, but I went the long way. And I had bought a digital camera in Japan, probably only the year before. They were relatively new back then. And I was looking around Ventspils near the water and taking some photos. And I could hear these men behind me. They were standing quite close to me. And of course, I don't speak Latvian and I couldn't understand much of what they were saying. But I could hear them say some words that sounded very much like digital camera. And so I turned around to sort of smile at them, and I understood that one of them was trying to explain to the other what my camera was all about, because his friend had obviously never really seen one. And so we got chatting. They spoke great English, which was helpful because I didn't speak Latvian. And I tried it out on them. I took a picture of them and showed them on my screen. And one of them, he just kept saying, "Oh, splendid, splendid." I just remember it like it was yesterday. And then we chatted a bit more, and they gave me some great tips about Ventspils, and we chatted about Australia. And it was just a really lovely, fun conversation. And it's just one of those things I always remember. I'll put a link in the show notes, in fact, to a post I wrote about them. And you can see the very photo that I took of those lovely men in Ventspils. So that's a simple thing that can, you know, be a memorable and fun part of traveling, from having a conversation with locals. And I have three guests today who've had all kinds of interesting conversations with locals on their travels. The first is Alicia Nelson, and she was telling me about her first trip abroad without her family. And that's when a particularly interesting and kind of monumental conversation took place with a local in Spain.
The trip that I really remember, and the trip that set up how I want to travel and basically taught me how to travel, with my friend Sarah. And Sarah was a foreign exchange student in our tiny little high school. She's from Galicia in the northwest part of Spain. And so she landed in our tiny high school. We had 30 plus people, between 30 and 40 people in our graduating class.
Oh, wow. Tiny.
So really small, in a town of just a couple hundred people. So it was really, really different for her, but we hit it off right away. And from maybe the second week that she was in town, she was like, "You're going to come see me in Spain." And that just was not something that was really done in my family. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like travel was this mysterious thing that happened to other people. And this is odd because my aunt on my dad's side is a flight attendant, and my aunt on my mom's side at the time was a travel agent. So we had tools and we had people in our lives that traveled a lot. But in my immediate family, travel meant road trips, and international travel meant Canada or Mexico. And we drove cross country and visited family in Arizona and Texas and crossed over into Mexico that way.
Like, oh gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Flying was strange. having friends from abroad was lovely, but not anything that people were familiar with in my family. So my friend Sarah said, you're just coming. And this was right after, it was the same year that I had been to the close-up trip in Washington, D.C. So I had a little, confidence in my own ability to travel alone. And she wanted me and my friend Liz and Carrie to come with. And we all just said, our parents aren't going to let us. Our parents aren't going to let us. And one day we realized, you know, we could just book the tickets.
Oh,
We could just go.
how
So,
old are you? This like 17, 18 or so?
17, yeah.
Right, okay.
I'll never forget it. My aunt, the travel agent, called me and she said, Alicia, it's not going to get any cheaper. It's just not. It's now or never. Do you want to do it or not? And I said, yep. And she goes, oh, your parents said yes. And I said, book it. She
Just
goes,
do it.
everybody else's parents said yes. And I said, just book three. It's my
Oh,
event.
wonderful.
And she did. And we went to Spain and it was amazing. It was in August, so it was their holidays as well, which a lot of other
Perfect.
people have told me, like, oh, you went to Spain when everybody else is on break. That's crazy. I'm like, no, it was wonderful because we got to spend so much time with her family. We flew into Madrid and her grandmother was traveling, so we stayed in her grandmother's apartment.
Oh, perfect.
A wonderful neighborhood, hung out in the Plaza Mayor and drank wine and Coke, which is hilarious. A complete 17-year-old drink, but
Yes, I couldn't drink that now.
we just sat and looked up and met people. We met people from Italy. We met people from Australia. And I just thought, this is it. This is exactly what we need to be doing. I don't even care what else happens on this trip. Like, I'm here. I'm seeing the oldest thing I've ever seen. And I made my friend Sarah laugh because I would say, this is the oldest thing I'd ever seen. And she was like, oh, Alicia, it gets so much older. And she just would delight in showing me like all these buildings and aqueducts. All over. We worked our way kind of out from Madrid and we went, I think we covered 12 or 13 cities in the central and
Oh,
then northwestern
fabulous.
part of Spain. And
And with a local, it makes such a difference.
oh, it was great. It was wonderful because we were able to kind of alternate between with her family, if they had to work, we would just spend our days exploring the city. And Sarah really taught the three of us. We were the ones that taught her how to drive a car and how to like drive a jet ski and four-wheelers and that kind of thing. Because we sort of grew up basically in the country. But she taught us how to, I mean, read a bus schedule and to figure out the timetables and to take a train and, you know, order competently in a restaurant and all those kind of little details that make traveling a lot easier.
Oh,
And
perfect.
we just went everywhere. We must have done two or three different trains, several different buses. We were on the beach. We were hiking in the mountains. We just tried everything. We were in cathedrals and museums, and it was wonderful because we could do that on our own. And then we would meet up with her family for a really great dinner. And I love Spanish meals because they're like me. They like to stay up late, like linger over food, and everybody's talking and laughing and drinking, and it was wonderful. So we got this great mix of like family life and kind of more of a traditional traveler experience. And it was just incredible. I got to practice my Spanish. And that family really taught me. I distinctly remember I was sitting with her dad, Miguel, who we still see. We went back for my
Oh,
friend's wedding.
wonderful.
And we were sitting at their apartment. And she shared this apartment with her mom and dad and her two sisters. And we're sitting at their kitchen table, this red and white checked tablecloth. And I remember like staring at it and drinking my coffee and being like, how do you travel? And he looks at me and he's like, how do you travel? He's like, how did you get here? You got on a plane. I said, no, and he doesn't speak English well, and I didn't speak Spanish well, but I'm having this halting conversation in Spanish. And I'm like, how do you do it? How do you get the money and decide to go? And he said, Alicia, if you decide that travel is something that you need, then you just do it. And you just do what we do and you cut out other things that you don't need. And that was just completely revolutionary to me because in my life before that trip, travel was a luxury and it was something that very wealthy people did. And it was something that you did only if everything in your else in your life was done. And it was amazing to go back and to be able to tell my parents that I found a place that is like me. I found a place where everybody likes to stay up late and where they take naps during the day and they like to eat lots of little bits of food and not one big giant meal. And they make traveling what they do. It's not a once in a lifetime trip thing. It's like what you do every summer. And that no adult had ever talked to me like that. And no adult had ever told me that that was reality. And I think about it all the time. I mean, it changed my life.
Oh, I bet just that almost permission that travel can be a priority and not just a luxury. That's really, really important thing to understand and really believe.
Yeah, and he even said, like, it's important. Like, it's important to our family. It's what we do. He was like, do you have other hobbies? And I said, oh yeah. And he goes, well, then just make this your hobby. This is your big hobby. This is what you do. It's a part of who you are and what makes you happy. And that just blew my mind.
And changed everything.
Yeah. I think about him all the time. I'm sure he has no idea, and he would laugh if I told him that,
Yeah,
but
how influential that one conversation was. I love that those kind of sort of one-off conversations with someone in another country can become something really meaningful and almost a way that you live your life and change your life from it. So I'm very glad that Alicia got to speak to Miguel that time. Now, my next guest today is Joe Bauer, who I spoke with quite some time back, but he had so many good things to say that he's back on this episode. And we had quite a wide-ranging chat about the kind of locals you speak to when you travel, including locals in Germany, in El Salvador, and even Japan.
I was in Germany in this past June 2015, and I was doing a story on for BBC Travel on the Berlin Wall bike trail. And one of the things I sometimes use to meet people in wherever I'm at, I think this instance it was couch surfing, and I don't actually use it for the surfing aspect, which it's cool if you do, but just not my thing. And I'll see like what kind of events are going on, and there was a language exchange thing going on in Berlin, and I really like languages, so I decided to take the train down when I was done with my day, went down there, and long story short, I met a local woman who is about my age. I think she was in her late 20s, so she grew up in or was born in the German Democratic Republic, so East Germany, but never really necessarily identified with that because, shortly after she was born, everything changed. And so she ended up getting cut from the got cut from the story just due to word count, but she added a little color to my own. I think that kind of just helped shape my story, even though maybe her quotes had to get cut, but it was just something that, helped fill out my story.
Yeah, I agree that that's those kind of backstories in Germany or anywhere in like informally communist Europe are really interesting because they're people who for all intents and purposes are really, really similar to Western Europeans but just happen to be
Sure.
on that side of the wall and so therefore grew up with a really different circumstance. But
Sure.
yeah, it's not it's sort of always struck me as so inane that you could have been on one side of 10 kilometers away from each other, but life turned out so differently. So,
Right. Well, the better version of that is when I was traveling in El Salvador with my wife, we were hiking, and our, I guess, guide, I started asking him questions, and this is where the language being able to speak the local language comes in handy, because in El Salvador there wasn't too much English, so being able to speak Spanish was pretty essential in really filling out that story and that experience. And we met one our hiking guide. I don't know if I was too, hopefully I wasn't too blunt, but I was curious to ask him about the Civil War, and he shared that he worked for the or he was fighting for the side of the government, and but he didn't have any animosity in his voice. It was when I wrote about it, I described it as him saying, I fought for the government in such a nonchalant way that I would say, oh no, I want cafe negro, not cafe con leche, like just something. And he was like, he just kind of pointed northeast. He was like, oh no, FMLN, which is the guerrillas, the leftist guerrillas. He's, oh no, they were over there, so I was for the government. But didn't seem angry about it. So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? It's just a fact to him. It's not,
Yeah. And a lot of people in El Salvador, it's just interesting to talk to them about that stuff. And that's, again, with the language and meeting locals. We went to hopefully I'm not blanking on the name, the Centro Arte para la Paz in Xochitoto. And they have a cool little museum about what they're doing to fight domestic violence and violence against kids in their area. But also they have a lot of Civil War history. And we were talking with the host there, who was a Salvadoreño, and he was asking us, like, how much do you know about the Civil War? Because unfortunately, as with most sad Latin American history, the U.S. does not have a cheery chapter to add to that story. Yeah. And so he was kind of testing our knowledge on it. And so it was interesting to have that conversation with him.
Oh, it's very interesting sometimes, and sometimes tricky, but to have those conversations on the perception and what's taught and what's published about wars and mm-hmm. world events. Like I know when I was living in Japan and chatting to some local Japanese, their history books were quite different to ours. And I think usually the truth is somewhere in the middle anyway, even if it's not that anyone's been trying to cover things up. But, that kind of conversation is a great way to really get to know a local culture and a local history, isn't it?
Absolutely. How was the history different from, what was it about World War II history between the Australian and Japanese?
Oh, we never got to talk about the Australian aspect, but things like anything to do with Korea, their versions were completely different to the versions I'd heard before.
Sure.
So, yeah, things like that. So, yes, no, I don't know. It's a good question that you ask, and I don't know if I ever asked them about like Japanese and Australian relationships during the war, because I probably thought it was too impolite.
Sure.
Given that Japanese people are so overly polite, I probably didn't dare to raise anything like that.
And everything I had heard, I was actually just in Japan in November for a couple of weeks, and everything I'd heard was they don't like talking politics or anything. So it's probably good that you didn't start off with. So how is your history of the war?
Tell me what you think happened. Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, there's such lovely, lovely people that you don't, you know, it's not perhaps in South America or Latin America, people might enjoy getting into an interesting like political conversation and, you know, kind of argue it out, because that's maybe perhaps more, their personality is suited better to it. Whereas in Japan, you really don't want to go there, I think. Yeah.
That's very true. I did find it in all my Latin American travels that they're more willing to engage in current events and politics than I did in what limited Asian travels I've had, especially Japan.
Yeah, I think especially Japan, that's probably true.
Chatting with Joe brought back memories of some of the interesting conversations I had with my students, especially when I worked in teaching English in Japan and Slovakia and Germany. If you ever want to get to know the locals well, teaching English is a great way to go, because you get to know the people in a kind of a really different environment, and there's lots of excuses to ask them lots of questions. Now, my final guest today is Alex Swalinski from Go, the podcast. He's new to the Thoughtful Travel podcast today. And we chat about a time he experienced in Argentina when talking to the locals wasn't as easy as he thought it was going to be, but it was still a very interesting experience.
I had just gotten out of the Marine Corps, and the first thing I wanted to do was just leave the country. I thought to myself, I need to get out of here. I just need to like clear my head and go somewhere where everything is different. The culture, the language, the mannerisms, the dance, the music. Mm. And so I bought a one-way ticket to Argentina, and I lived in Buenos Aires for a while. And I was just spending a lot of time up there, and I got pretty bored of being in Buenos Aires. And so I found out that there was this horse ranch up north in an area of Argentina called Corrientes. It's a province of Argentina where they're famous for their horseback, horseback riding skills and all their cattle. And I found a farm that accepted volunteers to work on a horseback, a horse and cattle ranch up in Argentina. And so I got on this bus. It took me like 12, 13 hours to get up there overnight. And I get up to this ranch, and the way it worked was you worked on the ranch and they gave you room and board.
Right.
And so they were also very accommodating to people that hadn't any horseback riding experience or who weren't gauchos.
Was so that that's you? Gaucho. Were you a horsey person or not?
No, I never.
Not at all?
No.
You don't strike me as a horsey person. I'm just checking.
The most experience I had on horseback was on a pony, I think, when I was like 8 years old. Maybe.
Right. Okay. Like me.
And so I found out that there was this horse ranch that, you know, they took volunteers. And basically it was, you got as much as you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted, you could just brush the horses all day and yell at the cows if you wanted. Or you can try and take lessons with the gauchos. You can try and learn how to, you know, groom the horses, you know, clean their hooves, things like that.
Cool.
And yeah, so what I wanted to do was I wanted to be on horseback. I wanted to be with the gauchos, you know, the Argentine cowboys. I wanted to be up there and riding and yelling and going, yeah, yeah, and like trying to catch these cattle with a lasso. And so I get up there and, you know, one of the first things I realized was, wow, the language here is very different.
Oh.
You know, I thought this was going to be very, I thought it was going to be Spanish, and it was Spanish, but so up in Northern Argentina, they have a very strong, I guess, indigenous influence up there. And there's a very popular indigenous language called Guarani. And so the Guarani people, they're still around, and they have a huge influence on the language there.
Right.
And so up there, they intermingle some of the words. So Guarani and Spanish mix a lot.
Oh, dear. That's not good for you.
And sometimes I'm trying to understand the directions because we have cattle running all over the place and we have dogs barking and I'm in the middle of on a horse and I'm not supposed to be blocking the way and all the cattle are going and all the gauchos are yelling at me like, get out of the way. And I have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah, no.
And I'm trying so hard to be a good cowboy. And they're all mad at me.
Oh, no.
And, you know, eventually I start realizing that, like, you know, sheesh, you guys aren't speaking Spanish at all. Like, that's not Spanish. And
it's not
for
fair.
A long time. No. So for a long time, I thought it was just the slang. You know, I thought that they just had a different dialect of Spanish. But then I left, and a couple of years later, I start researching the area that I had been at, and I realized, oh no, you know, they mix Guarani with Spanish.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like in English where we have several different words for cars. You know, we have the word auto, we have the word car, vehicle, sedan. We have several different words to describe this one thing. And so with Guarani and Spanish is they intermix the words. So someone there would understand, like, clearly what they're talking about, but you take an outsider and
you know, no chance.
Shoot it. No.
And all you wanted to do was be a good cowboy.
That's it. That's all I wanted.
Oh, that's fabulous.
I just wanted a cool red handkerchief to tie around my neck.
Yes. Did you improve over your time there?
I did. Eventually, I just stopped listening to the cowboys and based my judgment on my instinct. And and I got really good on horseback, too.
Did you?
I got really
How
good.
Cool.
Yeah. They ended up trusting me to go out on my own. And because it was a huge, huge land, a huge property. And so they would need someone every day to walk the perimeter of the fence. And so you could only do a section of the fence, you know, all day, because it was such a huge piece of land. Right. It would take several days. And oftentimes you would find cattle or horses stuck in these wire fences.
Oh, no. Okay.
Or if there was a breach, you know, you'd have 100 cattle that just walked into the neighbor's yard. And so every day you had to do this stuff. And so once I got good at horseback riding, I would say, I'm not going out with these gauchos anymore. They're mean. I'm just going to go on my own and with my horse and just do my own thing. So it was really cool. The last couple of weeks, I was just riding on a horseback in the middle of the countryside.
Oh, that sounds fabulous. And what a great way to experience different local culture.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'll make sure I remember to learn from Alex's lessons if I ever decide to become a cowboy or a cowgirl with the Argentinian gauchos. I love the story. Anyway, that's it for our topic of having conversations with locals today. Thank you very much for listening. It was episode 59 of the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. So that means you can find the show notes at notaballerina.com/59. A big shout out to my three very interesting guests. First of all, we had Alicia Nelson from the Prairie Style File. So you can find her at prairiestylefile.com. And her new book is now out, North Dakota Beer, A Heady History. I've left a link to that in the show notes. Second, we chatted with Joe Bauer. You can find him at joebauer.com. You can also find him at the Without a Path podcast. And he is now co-host of the Trivago podcast as well. Some really interesting episodes that have just come out in the last few weeks. And finally, I chatted with Alex from Go the Podcast, and you can find him by searching for Go on iTunes or also gothepodcast.com. And I'll also leave a link in the show notes to my post about meeting the locals in Ventspils in Latvia. I would love to hear about some of the conversations you have had with locals. So you can hop over to the Thoughtful Travelers group and tell me there. Just head to Facebook and search for Thoughtful Travelers or click the link in the show notes. You can also catch up with me on Twitter at Amanda Kendall. Use the hashtag Thoughtful Travel Pod. And as I mentioned, show notes are at notaballerina.com/59. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. Show notes and other information are at notaballerina.com/podcast. Join me again soon for another chat about why we travel. Bye for now.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, podcast.